Today's Teisho will be on case 46 in the Book of Serenity. Case 46 is entitled Deshan's Completion of Study. Introduction. The clear ground, where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, deludes people. The clear sky without a fleck of cloud in the eight directions fools you. Even though this is using a wedge to remove a wedge, it doesn't prevent taking space and hanging it in space. A single mallet on the back of the brain, particularly observe appropriate technique. Case. Great Master Wan Ming of Deshan said to the assembly, When you get to the ultimate end, you just find the Buddhas of all times have their mouths hung on the wall. There is still someone who laughs, ha ha. If you know this one, your task of study is finished. Verse. Gathering in, holding closed the throat, wind polishes, clouds white, the waters are chill, the weather is autumn. Don't say brocade-colored fish lacks a rich taste. Fishing through the ocean waves, one hook of moon. So the koan I just read, the koan from the Book of Serenity, might not make a lot of sense. The last part, the verse in particular, might not make a lot of sense. Gathering in, holding closed the throat, wind polishes, clouds white. The waters are chill, the weather is autumn. Don't say brocade-colored fish lacks rich taste. Fishing through the ocean waves, one hook of moon. That's so strange, isn't it? It's so weird, and it makes no sense. Something is gathered in. Holding close the throat, you think, whose throat? Wind polishes, clouds white. What does the wind have to do with the throat? What's getting polished and what's getting white? Then we're talking about water. Now the waters are chill and the weather is autumn. Well, we know that part because the weather is autumn, right? So that's something that makes sense. And then don't say brocade-colored fish lack rich taste. And you think, what? Okay. But it makes sense, right? The water. We were talking about water, so there's fish in the water. But they're brocade-colored fish. Why wouldn't they have good taste? Maybe this is some Chinese idea that, you know, if a fish looks good, it doesn't taste good, you know. And then fishing through the ocean waves, you hook the moon. It's this like madness, right? It's like madness. And you think, why didn't these guys just write it out? You know, why didn't they just say what they had to say? No. This is, koans are like this. You know, they're written in this strange, it's not just that they're stories that don't make sense. Think about what a strange statement that is. If I came in and didn't say I'm going to read a poem out of this book, but I just started speaking and I said, gathering in, holding close the throat, wind polishes, clouds white. The waters are chill, the weather is autumn. Don't say brocade-colored fish lacks rich taste. Fishing through the ocean waves, one hook of moon. You might think I'd had a nervous breakdown, right? Really? You know, you would think such a person was insane. A long time ago, I had the pleasure of practicing with a person whose name was Hirano Katsufumi. And Hirano Katsufumi was in charge of training at Eheiji. And his methods were quite unorthodox. One of the things he used to do was when we started meditating, he would start talking, which is not standard practice. So the Jikijitsu would ring the bell for the sitting to start, the meditation to start, and we'd start meditating. And then Hirono would start talking. Now, he was a senior person, so he got to do this, right? But he'd say, his English was okay. You know, he'd say, ah, you know, autumn, the leaves are falling. He'd say, I wanted to see the trees, you know, so I got on the bus and rode up to Volunteer Park. And on the way, I saw a little boy and his mother, and I thought about my own mother. I remember our house, you know. And then he'd say, in the winter, we would have snow on the roof, you know. And after a while, this would go on and on, and after a while you realize he's not on the bus anymore, he's not going to the trees, he's doing somewhere else, you know. And in fact, the story would never get us back onto the bus. We'd never get back, you know. We'd never get back to his destination, and it would go on and on. And our, you know, he would talk and talk, and you would be sitting there thinking, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point? You know. And he'd be going, oh, you know, he'd say, oh, he loved the poet Ryokan. He'd say, oh, Ryokan has a poem about this, and he'd recite it, and then, he would go, oh, so moving, you know. And then he'd talk about what he had for lunch or something. And people, you know, you'd sit there, and as you would sit there and listen to him talk. And of course, after a while, without any break, your legs would begin to hurt, you know. So he'd be talking about the poet Ryokan, he'd be talking about something in Japan, he'd be talking, and your legs would be killing you. You'd be thinking, when is the bell going to ring, you know. And so it's like you're waiting for his story to reach some kind of a conclusion. And the pain in your legs is making you wish it would come to a stop, you know. And this was his method of teaching. It's a very, very interesting method of teaching. One time, he came to visit us at the end of an evening sit. He came and joined us for an evening sit. And he did his usual thing, you know. He started talking. He said, oh, I'm so glad to be back in Seattle. You know, spring is here, you know, and he'd start talking in these aimless, crazy stories, you know. And I remember, you know, it got so late, people had not come knowing he was going to speak. You know, they'd come for their regular, like, Wednesday evening sit. And at one point, I actually did have to say, if you need to leave, you can leave, and, like, everybody left. But I had to stay because I had to be polite. The officers in the group had to stay. But, you know, this is a lot like life, is it not? It's a lot like life. You know, we want to tell a story that makes sense. You know, we want to tell a story that makes sense. And in our culture, we have a sense of what a kind of like what a, you know, a story, how a story should look. You know, a story should have a beginning, it should have a middle, and it should have an end. And everything at the beginning should be pointing toward the end. You know, this is how a story in the West is structured, you know. But that's very artificial. You know, it expresses a kind of ideal hope about reality, but it's not reality. It's not. It's a hope, right? We try to shape, you know, when people write books about themselves, autobiographies, they try to start with the end and show how everything led up to the end. So, you know, if it's a book about Alfred Hitchcock, a great filmmaker, they'll start out by talking about how he was interested in cameras as a little boy, you know, But of course, Hitchcock as a little boy wasn't destined to be a great filmmaker. You know, it was, you know, that's not really how reality works. We look backward and we can say, oh, it was heading here. But actually, that's just a after the fact kind of retelling of reality. You know, when we were going forward, it wasn't like that at all. I think this is quite important. I have been recently rereading Chuang-Tzu, whom I love. And if you read Chuang-Tzu, you know, it's not really a story, right? It's not. It doesn't have that form. And if you sit down and you say, what is the form of this book? It's very hard to say. Because it's not really going anywhere in particular. And along the way, you meet all of these weirdos and strange beings, you know. And none of them are predictable, you know. They're all weird and unexpected. And it's hard to know what to do with all of this stuff. All of these strange characters who have hunchbacks and teeth missing and the story is, it's like the story just goes on, and there's no ending. There's no ending. And in fact, there's really no beginning to it any either way. And this is sort of like, it violates our basic expectation about life. You know, when I was in high school, we used to read novels like Great Expectations. And Great Expectations is about a little boy who is raised by his aunt, by his sister, and his uncle. And he has dreams for the future, and his dreams seem to come true, but then he's disillusioned, and then he comes to a point where he sees how things really are, you know. And that's a beautiful story, but I wonder if life is really like that. And I wonder if life is really like that. I don't really think it is. I think it's more like those stories that Hirano-san used to tell. You know, we want life to fit. We want life to fit a kind of story pattern. And this is like basic rationality. Basic rationality. We want it beginning, middle, and end. But life is like more alive than that, I think. You know, it's not like that. You know, you start out living and you don't know where you're going. And you might begin to have like dreams about how things are supposed to go, you know. But the strange thing is that those dreams don't always help you go forward in life, you know? I think it's, I really could never have guessed where I would be now 40 years ago. You know, I could never have guessed. I guess there are people who, you know, when they're 10 years old, they say, I want to be a writer, and they become a writer. But even those people, I doubt that they really became writers in the way they thought, you know. Life is really rather different than that. You know, we have an idea of how things are supposed to go. So we might say, in 6 months, I'll be like this. I'll tell a story about myself right now. Right now, this is my situation, and then I'm going to do this, this, and this, and then in 6 months, this will be the end. This will be the result, you know. And we can imagine the whole story in our minds. You know, we can picture it happening. So we say, you know, right now, this is my situation. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and then at the end of 6 months, this problem is going to be solved. I'll have a big smile on my face, you know. When I was young, I used to watch a lot of TV. I don't watch much TV anymore, but TV shows, especially comedies, always end with like a moment where everything gets wrapped up, right? So there'll be a problem that emerges at the beginning of the program, and there'll be a lot of confusion, but at the end, all the characters will be like sitting at the kitchen table, or they'll be, it'll all be solved, and they'll all be laughing. And this is like a basic human desire, But you know, a problem arises because so often events don't go according to our plans. It's just so predictable, right? When events don't go according to our plans, it can create enormous anxiety, right? Just enormous. Because we're thinking, okay, at the end of the story, and it will be like this, and everyone lived happily ever after. Right? This is like basic structure, narrative structure. And the story's going to end, and we'll all be sitting around the kitchen table going, ha, 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 you know, we solved our problems, you know. We came out of this okay. And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That moment is so beautiful. You know? And it does happen sometimes, but very often life doesn't work like that. You know, it doesn't work like that. You get on the bus, and then, you know, you never get off the bus of life, you know. It takes you to somewhere else, you know. And now you're not on the bus anymore, you're in the library. And, you know, it's the reality is a little bit more complicated than the stories we want to tell about it, you know. And when reality and our stories don't go together very well, when they start branching off, you know, it can create like this tremendous anxiety. Tremendous, you know. We want somehow to make the story come true, the one we've imagined. And also, when it doesn't come true, you know, it can be very depressing, you know. You can wind up looking back at your life and saying, what a crazy life I've lived, you know. I should have had a better plan, you know. Should have had a better plan. Now this is like very, I think, very modern and also very Western way of thinking, you know. It assumes a lot about life which is not true, you know. We are still in the throes of like major economic collapse, you know. It didn't quite collapse, but it's difficult for people. A lot of people have lost their houses and so on. And I think a lot of people are very nervous, me too. I was reading in the paper yesterday about Dubai. I don't know if you follow the news of the world, but Dubai was the hottest city in the Near East. Don't know about this, you should do a Google search. You should just type in Dubai, and it'll show the Dubai skyline. And Dubai has built the best architecture in the world, right? They've bought the top architects. They have buildings that look like sailing ships. They have buildings that look like Rubik's cubes, you know. They have buildings that look like, you know, you name it. They have the tallest building in the world in Dubai, which is in the middle of the desert. Right? So I think that Taipei 101 is still the tallest, but when they're done, they're going to put a little piece on this that'll beat Taipei 101. So Dubai is like in the middle of nowhere, but it has this incredible designer city. And it was like the hottest place in the Middle East because it was an investment center, and they thought, you know, the future is going to be bright, you know. And they built so many of these like world-class designer buildings, and they're beautiful. If you look at them, it's just like, wow, so beautiful. But they can't rent them out. They're empty. And it turned, they built a housing development. The symbol of Dubai is a palm tree. And they actually took stones and cement and created artificial islands that look like palm trees. Yeah, from the sky, they look like palm trees. And on the island, they were going to put houses so that you'd have housing development out in the Gulf of Arabia. And people could own their own boats, and they could live on a development that looked from the sky like a palm tree. And so they were all set for this wonderful future. And it might still come, but what has happened is that they're about $80 billion in debt. They have a shortfall. It's actually much larger than that. They have an $80 billion shortfall. Right? I think that's right. I could be wrong, but something like that. It's massive. Now, you know, we too, you know, New Jersey owes about $8 billion itself, right? And California is $20 billion. And we don't even have any very tall buildings in New Jersey. Now, you know, the story the people in Dubai wanted to tell is such a familiar story. It's like, you know, have you ever seen the movie Rocky? You know, it's the underdog who wins, you know. So, you know, in the Middle East, there's a lot of poverty, a lot of so-called backwardness. And they thought, you know, we can be really modern. We can be more modern than the West. So they built this city, which is this incredible city, you know. And the pictures are astounding. That, like, even their malls are beautiful. They're like palaces, you know. Great architecture, but no money. You know? So this is really a big problem. And yesterday, all the stock markets, especially in Europe and America, went down quite a bit because they're all worried that they're just going to default on their massive debt. You know. Now, this happens to us all the time, all the time. This is like a big case. But, you know, it happens to us all the time. We make plans, and then, you know, as they say, life is what happens while you were making your plans, you know, or while your plans weren't turning out the way you thought. Now, this doesn't mean we shouldn't try to plan, but it means that that life is more alive than our stories, you know. So you know, we need a different kind of mind to deal with life. There is a kind of planning mind. There's a kind of mind that thinks in terms of like point A and point B. But there's another kind of mind which is a deeper mind. In the koan, you know, koans actually are trying to activate that deeper mind. So if we look at, you know, something like this, you know, the poem, let me go back to the poem again. Gathering in, holding close the throat, wind polishes, clouds wipe. The waters are chill, the weather is autumn. Don't say brocade-colored fish lack rich taste. Fishing through the ocean waves, one hook of moon. Now, you know, is that a story or not? You know, how do you make sense of that? You know? In our practice, we sit down on the cushion, and you straighten your back, and you enter deep ushin, ushin. And in deep ushin, your mental processing is not like normal mental processing. It's not. It's like a different, human beings have many different forms of consciousness. You know, even what we call ordinary consciousness has many different forms of consciousness. You know, so during the day, sometimes you're intensely self-conscious, right? Then sometimes you forget all about yourself and you're in the moment. And sometimes your mind is fixed like a flashlight and it's trying to solve a problem. And sometimes it's drifting on the water of events without any direction. Now, all of these are like different forms of consciousness. There isn't one form of consciousness. But what we call ordinary mind tends to be very self-centered. It's the I consciousness. And it's also very like linear. It's very linear, point A to point B, point A to point B. And so, you know, often we're thinking, how can I get from here to there? This is how we think. This is ordinary consciousness, or often. You know. This is the consciousness that wants to tell a story and make it fit. But when we enter deep wuxing, we're like in another kind of mind, another kind of consciousness. And often you'll notice that there's no time in that condition. It's like time disappears, or you experience time very differently than you do ordinarily. You know, I myself have a busy life, and I have a terrible habit of looking at my watch. So every once in a while I'll offend somebody because they'll be talking to me, and I'll suddenly think, oh my God, do I have a class? And I'll look at my watch, and immediately you'll see them quiet down, and they look, you know, like, and they'll say, am I interrupting you? Or, and I'll say, no, I'm sorry, you know. But that's very typical, right, of ordinary consciousness. But when you sit down on the cushion and you enter wuxing, one of the things you'll notice is it becomes very difficult to tell what time it is. And if you're really in deep wuxing, there are moments when time seems to disappear. Sometimes you sit down on the cushion and the sit is over like this, right? You sit down on the cushion and it's just like that. You think, oh my God, was that half an hour? More often, it's more like you're just swimming, and you don't have any shoreline, you know? And then all of a sudden the bell rings. It's not like their time was instantaneous, but it's like, it's just like swimming on an ocean with no direction. You're just swimming. Yeah? And this is like a different consciousness. There's no time in this consciousness, or it's not the same sort of thing. In this consciousness, we have like a different kind of awareness of things, right? It's like, it's a different kind of awareness. You know, you begin to notice things around you. You might be sitting on the cushion and watching your breath, and you enter wuxing, and then suddenly you hear like the sound of the wind coming through the vents. Or if we're at Sashin, where it's not so quiet, or at Murray Grove, you know, you can hear maybe, you know, all of a sudden you'll notice the sound of cars going by. Then you'll notice like there's light on the floor. Then you'll notice like there's a sound of like birds. And then maybe you'll notice that it's cool or hot. No. And you know, it's not a storytelling mind. It's not a storytelling mind. It's a different kind of mind. It's like there's no time, and what it's doing is like it's collecting everything. It's like everything is being put into place. You're putting everything, you're noting everything, and somehow as you note things, you get this sense of like oneness, you know? It's like when you hear the sound of a bird, you sometimes become the bird, you know? And when you hear the sound of the traffic, you feel connected to the traffic. And when you look at the light on the floor, you might feel like the light is part of you, or it's part of this moment, this like timeless moment. Everything it's like a different kind of awareness, right? It's not a discriminating thought. It's not discriminating thought. It's, you know, there's a kind of mind that can understand this poem, but it's not your ordinary discriminating mind, and it's not the mind that lives in time. So gathering in, gathering in. You don't have to know what's getting gathered in. You don't have to know who's gathering if you're in this mind. Gathering in, okay. Hold and close the throat. Now, you know, gathering in and throat. You know, okay, got it. You know, there's not a logical connection, but they're part of something. They're part of something, you know, they're part of a kind of whole thing. And it's like you're taking it all in. And you're taking it in, you're waiting. You know, there used to be a game that probably no longer exists called Where's Waldo? And it's a drawing with all these details, like it might be a forest. And you look at the forest, it's a drawing of a forest. It's just a line drawing of a forest. And you look at the line drawing of the forest, and somewhere in all the details, there's a little face of a person named Waldo. And the book shows Waldo's face, and then you look for it, and sometimes it's like a picture of a boat sailing on a sea, and somewhere in the waves or somewhere in the boat is Waldo's face, you know. But you have to really look for it hard, and you can't find it if you're looking. It's very odd. You have to kind of let your mind drift. You have to let your mind drift. You let it go. If you look too hard, you can't find Waldo. You have to sort of let your eyes get a little unfocused, and you sort of take in the whole thing. And this is very much like, this is like Zen practice, you know. You're not trying to get from point A to point B. You're trying to see the wholeness of the moment. Very different process. Very different process. The wholeness of the moment. So, basically, it's a different kind of intelligence, right? It's not how do I make this happen. It's where does this fit? Where does this fit? Where does this fit? Where does this fit? See, different kind of intelligence. And we don't have to tell a story anymore. It's not that kind of connectedness. So gathering in. See, we don't need to know who's gathering in. Okay, got it, gather. Hold and close the throat. Wind polishes, clouds white. No, if you're not trying to tell a story, all of this is very clear. It's all clear. It's not trying to make, it's part, you're looking, how does all of this fit? These are like pieces of a puzzle. Right? And waters are chill, weather is autumn. Don't say brocade-colored fish lacks rich taste. Fishing through the ocean waves, one hook of moon. See, this is like classic Zen language. See, Zen doesn't want to talk about stories. It wants to talk about how things fit together in the moment to make a unity. And you need a different kind of intelligence. And you have to have a mind that can be still and receptive and wait for it to fit together. Wait for it to fit together. Sometimes you can be looking at like a rug. You know, if you like Persian carpets, I myself am from the hippie period. And in the hippie period, every room had to have a Persian carpet, you know, like a Middle Eastern carpet or Indian carpet. Basically, that was considered the height of sophistication. And I love those rugs. Sometimes you could come into a room and sit down, and you'd be staring at the rug from an odd angle, you know. And there's so many little details in the rug that sometimes you can't see the pattern. It just looks like chaos. And so you sort of have to let your mind drift. And all of a sudden you'll see, oh, there's the pattern. See, this is the same kind of intelligence, right, that we need to use when we're looking at listening or reading the poem here in the koan. You can't make it into a story. That's not how to process information. the way you process information is to be in this timeless moment and see how it all fits together. Somehow it all fits together. Now, you can't think it through. It's an unconscious process. It's an unconscious process. So it's like your eyes see and your discriminating mind is quiet. But out of your big mind comes an awareness of like the pattern. There's a pattern here. And this is sort of like, I think, the way Chuanzi works, you know. He starts telling a story, and then he goes in another direction, and then he goes in another direction, and then he goes in another direction. And what you finally notice is not that you're getting from point A to point B. What you start to notice is that there are these patterns, see. If you know Western music, like symphony music, you know, symphony music is very point A to point B kind of music. So there's like a theme that runs through a symphony. And and the symphony is like variations on the theme with interludes, you know. But it's going from point A to point B. So Western music is like Western story. It's very linear. It's very linear, you know, A to B. So you get like, there's a prelude, like some kind of a prelude, and then you get into the symphony. And at the end, you come back and wrap it all up. I don't know if you've ever had the chance to listen to like gamelan music. In Indonesia, they have a kind of music which is like Indian inspired. They don't have like, it's a little bit like raga type music, but it's percussion instruments. They're like gongs and wooden blocks. And if you listen to, you know, if you hear a little piece of gamelan music, you think, oh, that's cool. You know, that's really cool. But if you buy a whole album, or they don't have albums anymore, if you buy a whole disc, you know, after a while, if you're a Westerner, you begin to feel like you're going crazy, right? Because it just seems to go nowhere. It's like they start out, and first they're soft and slow, and then it picks up, and then it... Then it's slow again, and then it picks up, right? And then it's slow again, and then it's really fast, you know, and very percussive, and then it's slow, and then it starts again, you know. And it's almost like you could just loop it around and go on and on and on and on. And it's such a different listening experience. And if you're a Westerner, you think, would you please get to the point? You know, get to the, you know, I want the dun da 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 dun 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 dun, you know, but it doesn't come. You know, there isn't a moment like that in the music. And so, you know, among Westerners, this can produce like tremendous bored. After a while, you're disappointed, and you might even get angry, like I'm out of here. You know? Or you might begin to feel bored. You know, this is like, holy Moses, when is this? I myself like gamelan music, but I have had friends who just hate it, and they'll just say, oh, thanks, but no thanks. You know? And you think, what is this music trying to tell you? You know, and what it's saying is, don't wait for the ending. You know, listen and notice the patterns, right? You know, now it's brisk, now it's slow. You know, now it's very choppy, and you begin to see the recurrence of like these patterns in the music. And actually, I think ragas are a little bit like this too. You know, there's a kind of an emerging pattern to things. You know, it's not getting you, that's what you're looking for, right? It's like waiting for the pattern in the carpet to appear. But of course, this is like a carpet that keeps shifting. You know, it's like if it were a magic carpet and the design could keep changing. This is how life is, see? This is how life is. So we want life to be A to B, and especially in the modern world, that's what we're taught. And then everybody lived happily ever after. You know, once upon a time, and then everybody lived happily ever after. But reality, I think, is more like the gambling music. And we kill ourselves, you know, when life doesn't fit our plan. You know, we get so upset and unhappy. Me too, you know. Can be very unhappy. You know, why isn't life doing what I wanted it to do? And we can get nervous and fearful, right? This is a problem with this kind of reasoning, this kind of A to B thinking. Life is, that's a fantasy, actually, or it's an expectation that is very rarely rewarded. More typically, life is like Chuanzi. This happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and you begin to go, oh, I see the pattern. So I think living sort of like a Zen life, it means having like a different view of everything unfolding around you, and it takes a different kind of mind. I mean, the ordinary discriminating mind is very much A to B, you know, but there's this other mind, which is the pattern mind, you know. That's the empty mind that can wait for the pattern to emerge. So this is very important. And this is how we do koans, right? You know, koan practice. How do you pronounce koans? Please say it.
Koan.
Okay. Much like this, right? They look like a story, you know? They look like a story. But they can't be resolved like a story. There's no way to resolve them like a story. There's no way to complete the story and make it okay. So you have to shift to this other mind. And when you're in this other mind, you're watching the play of form arise and dissolve, and arise, wuxin, and then something, and then wuxin, and then something, and this play of form and formlessness is life. And we can be agonized by it, or we can be quite entranced by it. It can be quite enchanting and alive, you know. Life sounds trivial to say, but life is really quite alive, quite a bit livelier than we might expect if we're not looking for the story. You know, at the end of your life, if you said, you know, when I was 10, I set out to be a great film director, and now I'm a great film director, that's one way to see your life, you know. But very few people really, that's really very artificial. You know, life is more like a trip where you start out heading to California and you wind up in Florida, you know. And this can either eat you up and make you unhappy, or it can make you you can be very excited by the beauty of this. And also, it's so alive. Identifying with life as opposed to hating life is quite important, wouldn't you say? And it takes a certain kind of awareness to be able to embrace life wholeheartedly. Great Master Wan Ming of Deshan said to the assembly, "When you get to the ultimate end, you will find the Buddhas of all times. Finally, you'll see them who have their mouths hung on the wall." Then he says, "There is still someone who laughs." Ha ha ha. See, what he's really saying is that is when you get to the end, right? The completion of study. Great Master Yun Ming of Deshan said to the assembly, "When you get to the ultimate end, you will find the Buddhas of all times sitting like in silence, right? There is still someone who laughs, ha ha ha. If you know this one, your task of study is finished. So, you know, as long as we're striving to get to the end of the story, we're going to be unhappy. Right? And as long as we look back at the past and say, why wasn't this the way, why didn't I plan more carefully? Right? That's like a formula for unhappiness, nostalgia and regret. But, you know, life is more alive. And someone who, ha, 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 this is like surprise, right? Surprise. That's life, surprise. The clear ground, where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, deludes people. See, we think we see it all in a single sweep. I see it all in front of me. See, there's not a blade of grass in my way. You know, I can, you know that song, I can see clearly now. Da, 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 da. Okay. The clear sky without a fleck of cloud in the eight directions. It's all laid out before me. Even though, and he says, if you think that way, somebody should take a mallet and hit you on the back of the head, basically. Even though this is a wedge to remove a wedge, it doesn't prevent taking space and hanging it in space. A single mallet on the back of the brain would be the appropriate technique. So you that's not the reality. So anyway. Practice Zen is to have a different intelligence, a different intelligence, not the storytelling intelligence. And by the way, you know, when something really bad happens to you, there's no way to tell a story to make yourself feel better. There is no such way. I know this from experience. You know, when, say, people we love die, you know, we want to tell them, we want to say, they had a good life, or, you know, he's in a better place, something like that. But, those are just stories, and they don't really make us feel better. What has to happen is we have to be in deep mushin, and you begin to have this mind that is waiting for the pattern to emerge. And when the pattern emerges, you begin to feel real joy, you know, real joy. This is how we solve our problems in Zen. It can take a lot of sitting sometimes, but this is how it's done. Page 15.